The Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Director had just published the first of six integrated product team reports. It's a look at major research areas that the S&T Directorate says could benefit all parts of the department. Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at DHS. He tells Federal News Radio's Nicole Agresco how the department is trying to make it easier for industry to work with government.
I think about a year or so ago, you brought up the idea of something called an integrated product team. And I think the goal here was to bring in some of the different components from DHS and help start these conversations on, you know, what projects you should pursue and that sort of thing. So can you tell us about that and how that's progressed since we last spoke about it?
So here's the challenge that we're trying to solve here. We have as you know, DHS has an incredibly broad mission set. And we have a limited budget in which to solve problems. Because right, so my job, the job of the S&T Directorate, is to bring technological solutions to the mission sets to solve the capability gaps that may exist within the department. That said, because we do have limited resources, the question becomes, how do we prioritize, how do we decide on what we actually do research on? So we decided that we'd bring together teams of folks from our operational components, along with S&T, our directorate, to determine what made sense. You know, what are the big areas that we should really think about addressing as a way of having the most efficient and effective use of our dollars? So we did that. We've come up with six areas: aviation security, cybersecurity, border security, biological, radiological, and nuclear threat, incident management. That includes our first responder work and counterterrorism. So the way this works is we actually bring our operational folks together to discuss their mission sets, their challenges. We then come up with those topic areas that I mentioned, and then within those topic areas, we come up with a more fine-grained set of challenges that we then actually publish so that our industry partners can help us to actually come up with solutions.
And, you know, based on some of those areas that you've identified, where are you on some of those? Have the proposals gotten out there to industry? Have you heard back from industry? How's that going?
So I think, you know, one of the challenges that we've identified since I've been here has been trying to develop a homeland security industrial base. And part of the issue there is making sure that folks understand what our challenges are. So we just recently actually published our first IPT report. So we're just starting to get some feedback from that. But that said, we've been all along working in these areas. So we've developed a number of different mechanisms, including more traditional long-range priority announcements, but we're also using accelerators. We have a Silicon Valley program, and we're doing prize challenges as well as ways of getting our message out to industry as a way of energizing some set of industry to start forming our industrial base.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those different initiatives that you have going on. You mentioned the accelerator project, and I think the broader goal of all of these things is to just make it a little bit easier for industry to work with you all. So how's the accelerator project going? What updates can you give us?
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited about this. This was an idea, I think, you know, that we just thought we tried as an experiment. Again, this goes back to realizing that we have to develop a strong, enthusiastic industrial base. So the thought was, can we actually start early stage companies? And we said, well, let's try that. Let's do an experiment. The first experiment we did was around wearables for first responders. We invested in two existing accelerators. The program is called Emerge. We actually had about 100 companies apply for these accelerators. We had 25 that were selected. 18 actually came out the other end. And since that time, we've actually had good success with those companies. We've got, I think it's like 50%. Have actually received follow-on funding, and three are actually selling into the first responder market space right now. We've also linked them up with larger companies so that we can increase their ability to have distribution channels and scale more easily, as part of, you know, which is part of one of the challenges or some of the challenges for these startup companies actually developing business in these areas. So one of our concerns with these companies was, can we actually develop sustainable businesses that have both commercial and homeland security applicability? And so far, that seems good. We've started our second round, and we're getting a lot of interest with that. And you know, stay tuned for that one as well.
And can you talk about some of the challenges that come with working with these types of companies? I mean, from what I understand, they're not necessarily incredibly familiar with working with the government to begin with. So how do you overcome that challenge?
A couple of problems. One, a lack of familiarity with just doing work with the government. And that specifically comes about a couple of ways. One way is that they don't necessarily know what problems we need to solve. And that became clear to me after I took a couple of visits to a couple of areas in Silicon Valley and Boston, Austin, et cetera. It became clear to me they don't really know what our problems are. The second problem is, even if they know what our problems are, is how do you actually do business with us? So how do you become part of, how do you participate in a solicitation? How quickly can we actually give you investment dollars if we actually, if you're selected through the source selection process? And how do you do, and what is that source selection process? Because typically, if you go through the traditional process, it can take a while, as I'm sure you know. And that doesn't really match the type of time constants, the type of pressures that these companies have. So what we've done is we've developed something called our other transactions solicitation mechanism. What this does is this actually takes advantage of something called other transactions authority. And this is defined as something for non-traditional businesses. Those are businesses that traditionally don't do work for the government. And that it's for the purposes of research and prototyping. But it gives us the ability to do work with these companies that haven't don't have the traditional type of systems that some of the larger companies do have to do business with the government. So that's one thing we've done. But the other thing we've done is we've streamlined the solicitation process itself. So some of the concerns that we've heard has been this just takes too long, it's very difficult to get through the proposal process, these kinds of things. So we've actually created, and this is working with our Undersecretary of Management and our Chief Procurement Officer, a much more streamlined solicitation process. In this, we've actually modeled it after kind of a Shark Tank style process, you might say, where essentially the first stage is you have to fill out a 10-page application, which is pretty short. That application is then vetted by some of our subject matter experts. That's kind of the first gate, if you will. And the second gate is you're asked to come in and present a 15-minute presentation or video. That's it. And then based on that, you are given a thumbs up or thumbs down, so to speak. And then the goal after that is to get funding to you within 30 days. We've actually gotten funding in one case to a company within 10 days. So we're very happy with this process. I had a chance to talk to a CEO of one of the companies a couple of days ago. Got a lot of good feedback. He was saying that, you know, the advantages he was getting from this was, one, of course, he gets the mentoring that an accelerator would give you, but he's getting exposure to important problems that he thought, because they're Homeland Security, they're important to him personally and his family and his community. So he was really excited about that. And then not only that, he gets to, we were introducing him to some of these other companies, these larger companies, as well as the test and evaluation ability we have in operational environments to give them some sense of how well their product actually works in our particular market space. So it was really good feedback. And I've also talked to some of the senior leadership of the larger companies. They've found that this helps their aperture, if you will, how they're looking, what companies they're looking for they might want to work with that they might not have found before. So far it seems like this has been working out quite well for all the folks involved.
You mentioned a little bit some of the feedback that you've gotten from some of these companies, but do you find that they are understanding what it is that you all need, what DHS needs, and how to, you know, tailor their proposals to meet your needs?
So far, yes. I think one of our jobs is translation. And I think we have to be able to take the information we're gaining from this IPT process that we discussed previously and be able to make that specific enough and clear enough for companies, for technologists, for business folks that don't traditionally work in this space to understand what we're talking about and what we need. And that translation can be difficult. But you know, that's part of our job is to make that translation.
Where would you like to see this process go into the future? I mean, this is still relatively new. You know, your Silicon Valley office, the accelerator program, these things are still relatively new for you all. But where would you like to see this go in the future?
So let's go back to, you know, what I said before, I think, which is what our mission is. You know, we're really trying to solve some of the most important problems of Homeland Security. We're trying to do that with the most effective, efficient use of the investment dollars that we have. So we've created an IPT process to define what the priority things are that we should be working on. And if you look at the innovation literature, you know, what it really takes to be a really innovative environment, part of that has to do with being connected with the operational users. Another part of that has to do with having a very wide aperture and looking broadly at what technology is out there, what technology is coming and anticipated. And so I think where I'd like to see this go is where we have a amplification across the creative community of what our challenges are, why they're important, and how to work with us. And I'd like to see an emergence of this Homeland Security industrial base, where it's not just in one area. You know, this is across the country. We have international partners as well. It's not just startup companies. It's larger companies. It's everybody. It's academia. It's laboratories. It's an environment where creative people are aware of our problems. They're incentivized to work on our problems. And we actually are, as quickly as technology is accelerating, we're quickly fielding solutions for our personal users.
We're speaking with Dr. Reggie Brothers. He's the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at the Homeland Security Department. And you've mentioned the unity of effort a little bit so far, but wanted to ask you how that's evolved from the time that you first started at DHS to now.
So Secretary Johnson's unity of effort, I think, has been an extremely powerful concept. It's been an extremely powerful development within the department. I say that because, as you know, the department came together with a lot of agencies coming from different places. And what the Secretary has done has brought us into real unity and into a couple of different working areas. He's created these integrated task forces, but he's created a more unified acquisition process. And as part of this unification, that's where these IPTs fall in. So one of the last things he was trying to get done was make sure that not only is our acquisition process unified, not only are our mission sets unified, our operational commands unified, but our research and development is unified as well. And I think, you know, when you start doing that, that's when you start leveraging commonality across the mission sets. That's when you start being able to really focus on the most important challenges. And so I really applaud the Secretary for his unity of effort initiatives.
And to go into some of the IPTs a little bit more specifically, you know, everybody's talking about cybersecurity. Your department has a really large role in providing, you know, cybersecurity services for other agencies. But then at the same time, you know, you've been discussing this research and development around cyber. What are you seeing out there from, you know, different companies or research organizations or whoever that you might work with, you know, in this cyber field?
Well, I think it's really interesting. There's been a mentality of perimeter defense for quite some time. And I think what you're hearing a number of people in the community saying is we have to adopt a different type of paradigm. And you're seeing that. You're seeing things like moving target defenses. You're seeing a lot of emphasis on behavioral analytics. You're seeing an emphasis on bringing machine learning into solving some of these problems. So there's another area is in a risk base, right? So if you look at the White House's cyber strategy, they talk about more risk base, where instead of trying to protect everything at the same level, you're actually trying to assess what you have to protect at the most highest level as a better way to deploy your resources. So I think there's becoming a more nuanced and sophisticated viewpoint on cybersecurity, and you're finding companies that are actually doing that. Now then you go from cybersecurity, which has traditionally been in the IT world, to now we go into the cyber-physical world of the Internet of Things. That presents a much broader attack surface, which people are just starting to think about. I think the good news is people are thinking about it. I just hope we're thinking about it quickly enough. One of the areas that we're trying to push into is trying to emphasize to cities and communities this whole area of resilience, because I think that if you look at the capabilities that the Internet of Things brings to us, resilience, that is the capability of a community to respond to a natural or man-made disaster, is important. And there's a lot of issues here. You know, for example, what do we define as resilience in the first place? How do we ensure that happens in an efficient, effective way for cities, for city managers? So this is an area that we have been talking about with cities and communities, and it's an area that we're currently working on, trying to understand what are some of the capabilities that these new technologies can bring us.
So switching gears a little bit, you know, wondering if we could talk a little bit about engagement within your workforce. I know that was a priority for you when you first came on board, was boosting the morale within the S&T workforce. And we just wanted to hear your thoughts on how that's been going. I know, you know, DHS made progress on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, and I know the Secretary was happy with a lot of progress that the components and offices have been making, but wanted to hear your perspective.
So I think I can say, you're starting out, I think we have made progress. If you measure by the Feb survey, we're up, I think, 7 percentage points from last year, and we were up, I can't remember how many percentage points a year before that. So we have been making progress. I think what we've been really trying to do is a couple of key principles. One is just increase transparency and communication, right, and how are decisions being made. I think what I've been trying to do is make sure that I can communicate as much as I can to as many people as possible. There's some simple things. You know, it's walking around, it's talking to people. It's trying to make sure that are the kinds of things that senior leadership is thinking about is communicated to the entire workforce. It's getting feedback. You know, we have an employee steering committee now that's been used to make recommendations, suggestions to how to improve morale in the workforce. And I think these kinds of things are showing very good results. It's a work in progress, and it's something that I'm pleased with the progress we have made. There's more progress to be made. But I think this whole area of making sure that we communicate clearly what we're doing, why we're doing certain things, the benefits to the workforce, and also the mission impact, because I think folks are more incentivized to work when they understand how they make an impact to the mission, because we have such an important mission. And I think we've been trying to make those connections. So one way we've been trying to make those connections is something we're calling our Pioneer Program. And in the Pioneer Program, we're actually sending some of our folks to work with our operational components in the field to understand what they're doing and how they can make an impact. So this has a twofold result, right? So in one way, it helps our folks understand what the needs are. Another way, it shows them how important the work we do really is. We also have our components come to us so they understand better what we're doing. We're actually working directly with the Coast Guard Research and Development Center so that we get closer to the kinds of work that they're doing. And we're actually having companies come in as well. So we're really trying to emphasize and encourage our workforce to reach out to the components, to industry, and understanding the larger context in which we play.